Hey, what's going on? Welcome back to Philadelphia Eagles Talk. I'm your host, Kevin Woodman, and today I'm recording this podcast on April the 1st. That's right, the very first day of April, April Fool's Day. Happy April Fool's Day to everybody, although I don't know how much of a holiday this is really a celebrated holiday, but it is a couple of weeks away from a holiday that I celebrate. And that's the NFL draft. The NFL draft is fastly approaching us. We are in the month of the NFL draft, so I thought this was a perfect opportunity to essentially do my draft preview, my draft primer. The Eagles have officially traded back a couple of weeks ago, or you know, it seems like forever ago. It's probably more like a week ago, from the number 6 pick to the number 12th pick. They also picked up a 4th-round pick in that trade, which I don't think they previously had a 4th-round pick. So that's something that's really going flying under the radar, is that the Eagles were able to use that trade to also jump into a round that they didn't have any picks, which is nice. So I felt, like I said, I feel this is a perfect opportunity to do a draft primer, to give you guys my thoughts on what is now the number 12 pick, what I think will happen. And I've done a lot of research on this topic as far as what I think the Eagles will go with. It shouldn't surprise you that the Eagles, I mean, their philosophy as a team-building organization has always been offensive line, defensive line, and quarterback. That's always been their philosophy. And I did a lot of research that really supports that. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to give you guys the research that I came up with. First, I would like to say there's been some time to reflect on this trade. I mean, it's still a hot-button topic. A lot of people are still very upset that the Eagles traded away an opportunity to possibly take one of the premier playmakers in this draft at number 6. Guys that come up a lot are typically Ja'Marr Chase and Kyle Pitts. Number one, there was a rumor that came out after that said that the Eagles traded out because it became clear that they didn't think they would have a chance at Ja'Marr Chase. I don't remember who reported this, but it's a report that I saw, and it didn't get a lot of play. I mean, it's really a stupid narrative, to be honest with you. It sounds like something that was put out there for fan service. Oh, we traded out because Ja'Marr Chase wasn't going to be there anyway. I mean, I don't remember who put that report out. I don't know the full validity of it, but it's really dumb to think that way. If that's the case, you hold that pick until draft day and you let the draft board play out, and then if he's not there, you trade back. That's really how you typically do that. But I don't really see that. I mean, the discussion was that the Bengals, who are sitting at 5, like they're zeroed in on Ja'Marr Chase, which obviously he was college teammates with Joe Burrow. Obviously, that would be a good move, but I mean, Penei Sewell seems to be sliding in the draft board rankings. The more and more I see it, the more and more he is considered to be the best tackle in the class. But I mean, you know, there are no major events this year aside from pro days where everybody's running 4.3s and 4.4s, and you know, this is the fastest draft class in history because there was no combine to really set that bar or to set that standard. Or basically, there is no group testing environment like there typically has been. So it's really just left up to friendly pro days, and you know, that to me, it's a lot of them, I think, they're virtual pro days this year. I'm not even entirely sure. I know last sure there was, but a lot of this stuff is really being handled in a controlled environment that's really favoring these athletes when it comes to the measurables, especially when it comes to the 40 times, which I don't know what to make of that. But you know, when you see pro days, typically that's been always how it's been when it's come to pro days. It's always been that way where guys perform, you know, they just seem to perform better at pro days than they do at the combine. They kind of bit us in the ass last year with the Jalen Reagor pick. I mean, everybody saw when he went to the combine, his combine numbers didn't look very good. His 40 time, I think, was like a 4.46, which really isn't that bad. But when your game is built on speed, or you're selling the idea that you're one of the fastest receivers in the draft, that's not really measuring up. And then he goes to his pro day and obviously has a lightning fast 40 time at his pro day, and then everybody forgets about the combine. And then obviously we took Jalen Reagor, who had a decent year. We can't look at the Jalen Reagor experiment and say that it's over. He's a bum. I know a lot of people would like to do that based off of the fact that they just have some sort of grudge against Howie Roseman and his draft picks. But ultimately, Jalen Reagor showed enough in his first year that he looks like he's going to be an adequate receiver in the NFL. Now, obviously, obviously Justin Jefferson, you know, he looks like he's going to be a Hall of Famer after one season, and everybody would have preferred that. But at the end of the day, I mean, you know, it's just one year. We don't know what the future holds for these players, and Jalen Reagor still has the possibility of a bright future. He might be a guy who takes a couple years, but by the time he hits the ground running, he might be a consistent 1,000-yard receiver in the NFL. We really don't know that yet. So for people that are trying to bury that pick because they're so upset about Justin Jefferson, I feel like those are the same people that are going to try to make a big deal out of the Eagles trading back from 6 to 12. I love the philosophy that the Eagles took by trading back and getting an additional pick. I don't think that they would have got as much on draft day. I'm not really sure. Maybe they would have got more. It's really hard to say. But when you look at the draft points chart, and I didn't prepare this, I'm going to have to look this up on my phone, but there is a physical chart that all GMs and, you know, on draft day call the draft points chart that that people use basically just to have an idea if they're getting adequate value in the moment. Because ultimately, they only have like, you know, what, 10, 5, 15 minutes. It depends on the round, obviously. But they only have so much time in between picks to make their pick or to finalize trades and stuff like that. So, you know, there's definitely a chart out there that GMs use so that they can make these quick decisions. And I'm trying to look that up real quick. Obviously, this chart isn't the holy grail or anything like that, but the draft pick trade value chart is something that's just a reference that all GMs have with them when they're making trades. Sometimes teams get more, sometimes teams get less. Now, the Eagles at the sixth pick, the draft value of that particular pick, assigned to that particular pick, is 1,600 points. Now, the number one pick, just for reference, is 3,000. The number two pick, for reference, is 2,600. And then it drops consistently after that. The number three pick is 2,200. The number four pick is 1,800. After that, when it gets to the number four pick, it drops about 100 every time. So the Eagles, sitting at six, that pick was worth 1,600 points. Now, when they traded back to the 12th pick, that's a 1,200 point value. So that's a difference of about 400 points. Now, in reality, to drop that far from 6 to 12 on a average year, I mean, if you were to look at that perspective, a 400 point difference, that equates to about the value of a mid second round pick. Now, the Eagles, that's exactly the 50th pick, if you really want to say that. If they would have made a trade based on the straight value of the draft points chart, the draft pick value chart that, like I said, all NFL GMs use, that particular pick would have been the Eagles trading back from 6 to 12. And it's funny enough because the Dolphins are actually sitting, they traded with the Dolphins, and the Dolphins are sitting at the number 50th pick. So I'm sure that they might have even tried to say, hey, we'll give you the 50th pick to trade back, which is a second round pick. That's, you know, that's still pretty good value. That probably would have been something that I would have had an issue with because, yeah, the Eagles would now have 2 second-round picks. But in this scenario, I probably would have preferred, and I'm pretty sure this is why the Eagles didn't make that trade, I'm sure they would have preferred to stay at the number six pick at that moment and maybe try to get more out of the pick. So the Dolphins, essentially, who have a wealth of draft picks, probably came back around and said, okay, we'll give you next year's first. Now, next year's first, at the very least, if the Dolphins were to win the Super Bowl, next year's first would be worth about 600 points. So they already made out. Analytics-wise, trading that draft pick from 6 to 12, they already beat the system. They already beat the draft points chart. Now, I personally think anything over 400, according to this chart, is legit. So now, I personally think that the Dolphins, I mean, for number one, they're nowhere near a Super Bowl winning team with Tua. They're a team that's trying to build to that. And based off of the fact that they have so many draft picks, they're probably going to get to a pretty good, they're probably going to get to a point at some point where they're a very good team. They're not there yet. So let's say that, you know, worst case scenario, the Dolphins have a phenomenal year. Let's say they come out of nowhere and win that division and say, you know, win a playoff game or something. Say that draft pick ends up in the early 20s. I think that's the height for the Dolphins. I don't think their team's going to end up in the late 20s. So let's say they have a great year. They end up in the early 20s. That pick alone is probably worth double what the draft point charts suggest. So if it would have been 400 points to move back from 6 to 12, at the very least, I think that they're going to be, that the first round pick that they get for that is probably worth double, which to me is an amazing value. So, you know, let's say they land at the 21st pick, which is what the Colts landed at this last year. That's an 800 point, value pick. So you also have to look at this down the line too, because the whole philosophy of the Eagles is setting up perfectly. You're seeing exactly what the Eagles are planning on doing. They could have stayed at six, and they would have had a real chance at one of these top five quarterbacks. There's a chance that one of the five would have fell. Maybe it would have been Mac Jones. Maybe it would have been Justin Fields, which for whatever reason a lot of people are down on. Maybe it would have been Trey Lance, who what, only played a game last year. You know what I mean? It could have been one of those five. Probably would have been there because the Cincinnati Bengals. Let's just say they stay at five. Obviously, they don't need a quarterback. They would have went receiver or they would have went tackle. So if the Eagles really wanted a quarterback, a new quarterback, they're desperate for a new quarterback, they could have stayed at six and they probably would have got one. I'd put that probability at about 99%, although realistically the Panthers or the Broncos are not that far away. They probably could have made an offer to jump in front of the Eagles and take that last quarterback if they really wanted to. So that means one of two things. Number one, either the Eagles think that Jalen Hurts is on par with the quarterbacks that are left. I mean, I really don't know. You know, when the Niners trade up to the third, it was pretty much assumed they're going to take a quarterback. But it's not really known which quarterback that quarterback's going to be. I mean, that quarterback could be – I hear people saying that they could be a surprise and they could take Mac Jones. I hear people saying it's really all up to what the coach wants. But there's a lot of different thoughts out there. Justin Fields, the entire college football season, was considered the number two pick in this draft, just right behind Trevor Lawrence. I guess he didn't have the best year. Kind of an up and down year. He definitely showed out as pro day as far as his 40 time and, you know, stuff like that. But ultimately, it really depends on how these GMs feel. I think that this draft, once we get to this draft, it's going to be a wild draft. I think you're going to see, a lot of picks that look like reaches. But I think it's only because, like I said, we don't have a combine this year. Typically, when guys go to the combine, you got guys that make their mock drafts all year. Then the combine rolls around, and then out of nowhere, guys either have a great combine or a really poor combine, and the draft board just flips on its head. It just completely changes. This year, there's no combine. There's nothing like that to the point, there's no like interview process and wonderlicks and all that stuff. A lot of that stuff that really would rise or decline people, put their stock up, stock down, it's really not there. It's really all based on friendly pro days now. And I haven't heard a guy having a colossally bad pro day the way that you typically hear of a guy completely bombing the combine. So I don't think that on the public side of it, we're going to see as much because the combine is such a huge event. I mean, I as a fan, there's so many people out there that just sit home and watch the combine for the entire weekend. I know I'm one of them. I love watching the combine. I love watching these guys out there, show what they got and the commentary. To me, it's a great football event. Without that this year, there's not as much, public viewing of these draft prospects rises and declines. And I think that once the draft rolls around, all that stuff is still happening. It's still happening behind the scenes. You're hearing names of guys climbing up and you're hearing names of guys dropping, little tidbits here and there. But by the time the draft actually happens, I think you're going to see some wild swings in the draft board of draft stock that the average fan is going to say, like, well, that's a reach, or, maybe even the NFL analyst watching the combine or watching the draft and talking about the draft might say, well, that's a huge, a huge reach. I think you're going to see that throughout most of this draft. It's not going to come even close. I see a lot of people are saying, well, the draft board is probably going to fall this way now. I don't think it's going to come even close to that. I think it's going to be a bunch of wild draft picks for the most part because there's so little information to go on. I think most people are going to be going off of a single pro day and what they see on tape. And what people see on tape is much more indicative than the 40 time they're usually blinded by when it comes to the combine. The combine, a lot of times that really just, it doesn't really measure up to watching tape. And I think that will mean that the draft might be a little bit more accurate this year. But ultimately, my entire point is, when it comes to these quarterbacks going, I just think that it's anybody's guess. Other than Trevor Lawrence at number one. Number two, I mean, people are saying it's going to be Zach Wilson out of BYU. That's a popular thought. I don't know why we're hearing Justin Fields, dropping. I mean, obviously he's got a ton of talent. But if those two picks go that way, then by the time we get to number three, I mean, I've heard everybody from Trey Lance to Mac Jones to, I thought when I saw the Niners trade to three, I was like, well, there's Justin Fields right there. Boom. That would be my thought because I think he has the most potential out of those three. Obviously, the most physical potential in my opinion, but it could be any of those three. And if it doesn't fall that way, at what point you know, the board's going to go off the rails, in my opinion, after the first couple of picks. So for me to sit here and suggest that, well, you know, and I've heard a lot of people say this, that by the time the Eagles pick Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle will probably still be on the board at 12. I don't know what to make of that. Now, I know that I can surmise from, you know, the picks in front of the Eagles that there aren't a ton of teams that need receivers. I mean, that's something that you can make a pretty safe bet when it comes to the picks in front of them. Now, the best thing would be if five quarterbacks went in the top five or top six, that would probably be the best thing for the Eagles. I mean, now that the Eagles have traded out of six, the best thing for the Eagles would be if quarterbacks went 1 through 5. You know what I mean? Like if that scenario did play out, or five of the, you know, the more quarterbacks go, the better, and it's going to have other positions sliding. So let's say that in the top eight, that makes the most sense, because at number eight, there is obviously the Carolina Panthers, which a lot of people are suggesting are a team that could go after whatever quarterback's remaining. So let's just say that it's a safe bet that all five quarterbacks go in the top eight, meaning only three other positions would go in the top eight. There's four receivers, receivers slash tight ends, that I think any Eagles fan would be happy with. Kyle Pitts obviously being a tight end, listed as a tight end. Him, Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, and obviously the guy I think is going to go first is Ja'Marr Chase. I really don't think, when I hear that that rumor that Ja'Marr Chase, that the Cincinnati Bengals are looking at Ja'Marr Chase and that the Eagles traded out because they didn't think they could get Ja'Marr Chase, I really think that's bupkis. I think that the Bengals will probably take a tackle. You have to protect your quarterback, and they have really good receivers already. They had good young receivers last year, out of their draft. Why would they want to go heavy and draft another one? I don't think that's really necessary. So to me, you take Penei Sewell there. So let's just say that that's the case. So that means that there's only two picks. There's four receivers left. I'm losing my math here. So the Dolphins would be a six. They're kind of a question mark. I think the Dolphins you could easily see go, they could easily go receiver. So that could be one. Then the Lions, they just lost a receiver. They could go receiver. That could be another receiver gone. Then you get to number nine, which would be Denver. Now, they drafted a couple of receivers last year. I don't think there's any scenario where they draft a receiver. The Cowboys at number 10, they have some of the best receivers in the league. They have one of the better trios in the league. That's not a place where a receiver is going to go unless Kyle Pitts is still on the board. Now, if Kyle Pitts goes to the Cowboys, I know that that's going to be a real point of emphasis for Eagles fans. They're going to be crying forever for the next 10 years that Kyle Pitts. So we traded back. We could have got Kyle Pitts. And he ended up a Cowboy. That's a very real scenario. I think that offensive line could be something that they could go for. They could go for cornerback. They could go for the best cornerback off the board because they really need that more. I think based off of the fact that they have some pretty decent tight end talent. I think that's Dalton Schwartz last year. He played really well when he came in, so I don't think the tight end is a huge need for them. I think that they have Schultz, by the way. I think it's just Schwartz. But either way, they have some good tight end prospects, some good receiving tight end prospects. So I don't really think that that's going to be something on their board. The Giants also just signed a receiver, so I don't think that's going to be something on their board. These are all things. The Giants, I think, would be a spot where I could see Parsons go. I mean, these are scenarios where we could see Eagles fans crying for the next decade if, there's people out there that wanted Parsons, and then obviously the Giants taking one pick before the Eagles. The Eagles could also trade up, by the way. Let's not make it sound like they're sitting at 12 and that's the only place they could go. The Eagles could easily decide that they want to get back into, whatever position. They could trade back up a few picks and make a small – it wouldn't even be a huge, like I said, if we go back to the draft value points chart, let's say, just for argument's sake, did they want to trade back up with the Broncos at 9? That costs 150 points on the draft points chart, which isn't a lot. That's like the equivalent of a third round pick. Maybe they would probably even get a fourth round pick back. So the Eagles could easily trade back into the top 10 for a third round pick, which I think they would do. They have an additional third round pick this year because of the Wentz trade. So they still have a lot of, that's the thing. They have more draft capital than just about any team in the league. So they could easily trade up or trade back or whatever in just about any round that they choose based off the fact that they have so much draft capital. They can really control the draft board this year and next year. So that's one of the reasons I really like the trade. So, I mean, if they sit at 12, I don't see a lot of scenarios where – like I said, it's very unpredictable because the draft is, it just is what it is. It's unpredictable. Things, anything could happen. Teams could trade. Obviously, you know, a number of things could happen. I'm sure that there's teams behind the Eagles that could be looking at the Eagles as a spot that probably wants to go receiver. And, you know, there might be teams that want to trade in front of them. My teams like maybe the Raiders or the Patriots. I don't know. It's really hard to say. I mean, I'm looking at the teams right behind them, and there really aren't a ton of teams that are dying for receiver help. So, you know, at least not immediately behind them. So anything could happen there. But I think it's a pretty safe bet to say that with trading back, if they wanted to take a receiver at six, they got outrageous value. I mean, let's just say that, you know, let's go best case scenario here and say that, you know, Tua either sucks completely next year, or let's say that he re-aggravates his hip injury or he gets hurt again, something of that nature. If that were to happen, and the Dolphins completely tank, completely bomb this next season, because let's be honest, Fitzpatrick's not there to save him anymore. They don't have a reliable backup the same way they did when Fitzpatrick was there. They don't have anybody to turn to. So if Tua either bombs or gets injured again or something of that nature, they have a catastrophic season, then that the value of that draft pick goes up immensely. Like I said, it's probably going to be, you know, to me, I think a good barometer for that pick is somewhere in the teens, which is about 1,000 points draft pick. Remember, they only needed to make up 400 for this trade to equal, to make sense. I think that they somewhere end up between the upper half of the draft, somewhere between 16 and higher. But if they have a completely miserable year, who knows? We could be getting like a top 10 pick from the Dolphins. It's very likely, even though the Dolphins are a team on the rise and they're a very well-coached team, they've got a great defense, great special teams, things like that. It's going to be hard for them to completely fall apart. But if the offense isn't getting it done, there's a very good chance that this to me is probably a pick that's in the top half of the draft, which is outrageous value. It's immensely, you know, it's immensely good value for what they traded to trade back six spots. And they also, like I said, they jumped into the fourth round, which they needed to do. So that's how I look at the Dolphins pick. I think that they're going to get outrageous value back for that pick. And then I also think that if they really want to go receiver, one of the best receivers on the market is going to be there. I think that they also are in a good position where they could either get, you know, I don't really think that they're a team that likes to go linebacker. I don't think that Parsons is really going to be on their board, but he's a great player. I would love to see that if it was possible. I also think that where they're sitting, I think one of the best cornerbacks in the draft will probably be there. Once again, like I said, I mean, the Giants will probably, I'm not the Giants, I'm sorry, the Cowboys will probably take one, as be my guess. And I think that the Broncos, everybody's saying the Broncos probably takes, you know, Caleb Farley. But there's still a lot of really good cornerbacks on the board at that point. J.C. Horn is one of the names that I'm hearing a lot about. And I was watching some tape on him. He's a guy I like. I mean, I'm not going to say that I think he's worth the number 12 pick. I think one of those receivers would be a much smarter move if they were there. But ultimately, I just have this feeling that even though cornerback and receiver are much bigger needs, I just don't know if they're going to take any of these guys, to be honest with you. I look back at their history. I'm going to give you guys some information about the Eagles' draft history under Jeffrey Lurie. Now, this is Jeffrey Lurie bought the team in 1993 or 94, I think it was. So I went back 25 years just to, you know, because there's a saying that the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. That's the saying. And the Eagles are a team that when you look at how they won the Super Bowl, obviously, it was because of their offensive and defensive line. They had three or four, you know, Pro Bowl offensive linemen. They had a couple of Pro Bowl caliber defensive linemen. They were heavily invested in this, both sides of the ball, and that's how they won their Super Bowl. So, not to mention, you know, over the last two decades, they've been one of the winningest franchises in the league. They've been to six conference championship games. And every step of the way, you can look back at it and say they've had great offensive line and great defensive line the entire time. They've also had some pretty good quarterback play, which is probably, that's, you know, that's their number one priority is quarterbacks, obviously. But they're going to give Jalen Hurts a year. It's not too hard to tell that based off of how they set this trade up, that Jalen Hurts is going to be the quarterback for this year going forward. If he doesn't immediately show something, then next year they have, you know, a ton of draft capital that they should be able to trade up and get the, if they want to, the number one pick. If I go off the draft points chart once again, having three draft picks, which obviously, like I said, if they fall, you know, let's say the Eagles pick falls in the top 10, which is possible. So then that's worth, let's say that they don't have a horrible year, but they have a bad enough year that they get the same, let's say they get the same pick back. Let's say next year they finish sixth. That's 1,600 draft points right there. Then let's say the Dolphins finish in the middle. So that's somewhere around, you know, let's say they finish 16th. That's 1,000 draft points right there. So if you add that up, that's 2,600 draft points. Then let's say the Colts obviously have the best year. They finish 25th. That's 720 draft points right there. Those three picks alone are enough to equal more than the number one pick at 3,000 draft points would be. So whatever team would finish dead last, no matter what, unless they need a quarterback, obviously, the Eagles and the three picks that they have enough to jump up to the number one pick and get whoever the best quarterback is if that team is willing to trade out of that pick. So it obviously, you know, the entire season has to play out. Anything could happen. I don't really know who, you know, by looking at looking around the league, I don't see a team where I'm like, well, that team's probably going to be the number one pick. Maybe like the Lions. I don't think they have a great future, but they just restructured Jared Goff. So if say the Lions have a horrible year with Jared Goff, they are probably not going to need a quarterback. So that would be a scenario where the Eagles could easily trade their three number one picks. They wouldn't even mortgage their future. That's the best part about it. They wouldn't even mortgage their future to get this done. And they could easily jump into the number one pick in the draft and still have all the rest of their draft picks. Or, you know, best case scenario, obviously, Jalen Hurts works out. If Jalen Hurts works out, that's even better because they could load the team up around him with all these first round picks. The Eagles are in a great position because of this draft or because of this trade. But I digress. Like I was saying, I did some research looking back at the 25 years that Jeffrey Lurie has owned the team. The team philosophy has been fairly obvious that, what the Eagles value most and how they value, what position. I mean, offensive line, defensive line. Out of the last 25 years, the Eagles have selected offensive line or defensive line or quarterback with the first pick of their draft. They started off 20 drafts with one of those three positions. Now, obviously, the three times they did it with quarterback, it was Donovan McNabb, which when you hit on these picks, you don't have to draft them as much. So it can be taken with a little bit of a grain of salt. But Donovan McNabb, who was a hit, they didn't have to take quarterback again for the next decade or so. Then, obviously, Kevin Cobb, they started that draft. They traded out of the first round with the Cowboys, and they took Kevin Cobb in the second round, who was not a hit. But ultimately, that was their first pick. And then Carson Wentz, who was, I don't know, was he a hit? I mean, I guess he was for a short term. He was kind of a hit. But that's pretty much where the Eagles are at. Three picks for quarterback. Then when you go to the defensive line, though, I mean, offensive line, defensive line, 17 times out of 25 drafts. So to me, that's enough to say that they're probably looking at offensive line or defensive line. I mean, the defensive line doesn't really have any long-term solutions, I don't feel. I mean, if you look at this, this team, which needs a bigger need? I mean, they need youth, and obviously they're taking the approach that they're not really worried about this upcoming season, or if they probably would have stayed at 12 or 6, I'm sorry, they probably would have stayed at 6. So when you look at this approach of draft heavy, accruing so much draft capital, they're probably taking the long-term view of things. And when you look at the offensive line and defensive line, there's still a lot of age and question marks on both sides. I mean, Brandon Brooks, it sounded like they were reluctant to bring him back because there was talks about them trading him, pretty serious talks about them trading him. He's coming off of a major injury. He's had some serious injuries in the past. And I think he's at that 30-year-old age, you know, where it's like, well, we don't know what we have here. Jason Kelce, obviously, is year to year. He's always talking about retirement. Lane Johnson's coming off of also a serious injury. He's pushing 30 plus. So those are your three Pro Bowl caliber guys, and they all have huge question marks. So it wouldn't surprise me if offensive line, and there's some really good ones in this draft, if offensive line was a bigger priority than Eagles fans are willing to say. Now, with that being said, obviously, the Eagles have had success in recent drafts. I mean, Herbig had a really good year last year at guard. Seumalo is under contract, and he's a solid player. They don't want solid players, though. They want Pro Bowlers. That's how they build their roster on the lines. They want Pro Bowlers on both sides. I think that they might have one in Jordan Mailata. I mean, I think he was outstanding last year. I think he's an obvious starter for a very long time. And then they also drafted Andre Dillard. And I don't think they're going to give up on Andre Dillard yet. So I don't think that they're going to draft an offensive tackle with the first pick in the draft. I don't think that that's on their board because I think they have enough there. But it wouldn't surprise me if they did go with somebody who's a bit of a tweener that also could play guard. And there's a couple of guys that fit the mold there. Guys like, a guy that I recently really liked, and I think it would be a stretch for him at 12, is Tevin Jenkins, who's a guy who might be a tweener. I think he's a tackle at the next level. But he's a guy I really like that, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he moves up the draft board. Another guy would be Rashawn Slater. That's a guy who people are already talking about because of his arm length coming up a little bit short, that he could easily be a guard. You know, even though he's played tackle at the previous level, that's a guy who wouldn't surprise me. He could play guard. I mean, the Eagles love those combo guys. Guys can play inside, guys can play outside. I think he's a guy who's really on the board, and value-wise, he would go right in that area, which is something that, you know, if you really don't want a lineman, he's a guy that you should be looking at because I think he's really on their board. There's also a guy, you know, Vera Tucker out of USC, another guy who's kind of a guard. I think it's a little bit high for him, but some of these guys, which I'm going to mention, I almost feel like it wouldn't surprise me if the Eagles trade back again. I'm not guaranteeing that they're going to pick a 12. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. Eagles fans might lose their minds, but I feel like some of the guys that really fit what the Eagles need might be a little bit further back, and that includes defensive end. I think defensive end is another big hole that people aren't really talking about, especially when it comes to you know, what do they really have? Long-term defensive end solutions. I mean, Josh Sweat. Everybody's excited about Josh Sweat. Guy showed a lot of ability, but he's also got a ton of injury concerns that I wouldn't want to bet long-term on a guy like that. I mean, I like him, but I don't know. Is he a long-term starter? Is he a guy you can rely on? We all know that the Eagles like to have at least four defensive ends that they can rotate in and out. Same thing with defensive tackles. They typically want like three defensive tackles that are very good. You've seen the last couple of years, they spent a lot of money on the free agency market, bringing in Malik Jackson and the guy from Pittsburgh, I mean, who didn't really do much at all last year. But they, you know, Fletcher Cox, one of the highest paid defensive tackles in the league. They like to spend money there. They spend a ton of money at the defensive tackle position. Now, I know they have a new defensive coordinator this year. Maybe the philosophy changes a little bit, but I know that they do invest heavily at defensive line. And when you look at the defensive end position, especially, Brandon Graham's going to be 33 in a couple of days. I think his birthday is on April 5th. You also have, you know, the one guy that you have, the young guy that you have, Derek Barnett, has never really proven that he's a guy that you can rely on at any level. I mean, he disappears for huge stretches. He makes plays now and then. He also makes a lot of bad decisions. But given the cost of what they might have to pay to retain him, they might go a cheaper route and just draft somebody. When I look at defensive end, once again, I don't really feel like number 12, the value's there. I feel like receiver, the value's there. Cornerback, maybe the value's there at 12. But when it comes to defensive ends in this draft, the guy that I like the most is Jaylon Phillips out of Miami. Now, that guy looks like, to me, the best defensive end, outside linebacker, pass rusher, whatever, edge rusher in this draft. But that's something where he's not even on. I mean, a lot of people have Gregory Rousseau and Quiddy Pay ahead of him. And, you know, Quiddy Pay, I mean, I like the way he looks physically, but I think that he's somewhat limited. I think that he could give you the same type of production that Derek Barnett's given you. When I think upside, I think Jaylon Phillips. Now, that's a pick that I think if the Eagles took at 12, people might be losing their mind. But he is a first-round grade, I think, for the most part, just maybe a later first-round grade. So once again, that's another position where I say that the value's not really there. The Eagles might be better off trying to trade back into the first round to try to get one of these guys later in the first and still taking that receiver at number 12. That might be the way to go. But I think that based off the Eagles' draft philosophy, based off their history, they've done that so many times where they draft linemen. These guys have to be on Eagles fans' radar. You have to prepare yourself because I know a lot of people, if they don't take receiver with that number one pick, they're going to be going crazy. And you know, if you go back to Eagles draft history once again, the most drafted position that the Eagles have used in the second round has been receiver and defensive back. That's been their most drafted second round position in the last 25 years. They've drafted, let me see here, they have 9 second round picks have been receivers and 8 second round picks have been defensive backs in the last 25 years. So that's typically their drafting philosophy. They typically go offensive line, defensive line first, then they come back around and they take the speed guys. So with that being said, a couple of defensive tackles, there's some interesting ones. I don't know if Davion Nixon out of Iowa is still thought of as a high first round pick. I like what I see. I think he's one of the better pass rushers, which is something that the Eagles really like. They like guys that can rush the passer at all positions. They don't really value that big guy that just sits in the hole. They want a guy that can do more than that. They don't want a run stuffer. That's not what they do. They like guys that can do that can get after the quarterback from inside. So he's a guy that I think could definitely be on the radar. The only other guy that I think that really has a first round grade is Christian Barrymore. Which I don't even think Christian Barrett, he wasn't even really a full-time starter at Alabama, which is my understanding. He seems a little bit raw. He's a guy, I like him, but I just, once again, I can't see that value at 12. So there's a few picks that I can see the Eagles getting value at 12. But once again, like I said, I mean, we're not seeing the rising and the falling of these guys. I just get the feeling that the Eagles are going to end up taking a lineman, and most Philadelphia fans are going to feel like it was a stretch, it was a reach, unless they were to trade back a few more picks and accrue more draft capital, which I don't think that Eagles fans want to see either. So I'm just basically doing this podcast saying that if I'm an Eagles fan with this draft coming up, I would expect disappointment. I mean, honestly, like I would expect, not to say that the player they will get won't be good, because I think there's some really good players in this draft. But I'm just saying, if you have your mindset set on certain players, you need to just change your mindset entirely, because the Eagles' history shows that second round pick will probably be a cornerback or probably be a receiver. The first round pick will probably not. The first round pick typically is, and this is because this is what they value, quarterback, which they've already pretty much showed their hand. They're not going to get a quarterback, which really only leaves offensive line and defensive line. And I think that there's a couple of really strong candidates. I really, like I said, I'm really zeroed in on if they're going to go defensive line. I think that the one that makes the most sense is Jaylon Phillips. But like I said, I think that that's a bit of a stretch. And I don't know if he's really big enough for defensive end at the next level. He looks more like an outside linebacker, 3-4 outside linebacker to me. But the one that I really think makes the most sense, and, you know, this is a guy, once again, can play guard or play tackle, is Rashawn Slater. That would set them up for the future very well, because he could easily be the guard while they slide, Isaac Seumalo into center behind Kelsey. This is a team, they're heavily invested in the lines. If you had Rashawn Slater at one guard, and then, say, Andre Dillard, best case scenario, Andre Dillard works out. Best case scenario, Jordan Mailata works out. That's your left and right tackles right there. Then you got Rashawn Slater, bulldozing guard, and you have Seumalo at center. And then the other guard probably would be Herbig, and I think that they'd be happy with that. That's a lot of beef right there. Like I'm excited for that outcome, because most people that, cry about wanting a receiver or cornerback or things of that nature, name a receiver that won a Super Bowl because of that receiver. That's not typically how it works. Typically how teams work, it's all about the quarterback and supporting the quarterback. Obviously, you have to get, good talent around your quarterback. But when you look at, the Super Bowls revolve around the quarterbacks. They really do. And you have to give your quarterbacks protection. Look at Dak Prescott. I mean, that guy's falling apart after, a couple years of looking great, playing behind one of the best offensive lines in the league. Then these last couple years not looking so great because the offensive line's, giving up instant pressure. That, to me, is more important. We saw that when the Eagles won the Super Bowl. Nick Foles didn't get touched in that 2017 Super Bowl. That entire game, he did not get touched. And that's a big reason why they won the game. You could easily say the offensive line was the MVP of that Super Bowl as much as any other player on that entire team. And you could look at last year's Super Bowl and say that it was won and lost in the trenches also. I mean, look at how Kansas City, with their offensive line just completely collapsing with no tackles. You know what I mean? Like, Patrick Mahomes played his heart out, and you could see all of his raw potential as he was running for his life, making amazing throws all game. But it didn't matter, because you can't win with that. You need protection for your quarterback. And that was the undoing for the Chiefs, and the defensive line won the game for the Buccaneers. I mean, you could easily say that, Tom Brady got MVP. Okay, fine. But he got set up with amazing field position again and again and again. And that defensive front was just, they really won the game, in my opinion. Jason Pierre-Paul and the linebackers. I mean, that front seven, to me, was the real MVP of that Super Bowl. And then obviously they really took advantage of the Kansas City Chiefs' lack of offensive line. So to me, that Super Bowl is a perfect example of what teams should try to do. And it wasn't too long ago that the Eagles won the Super Bowl in 2017 with the very same formula, offensive line and defensive line. So I feel like we have to change our mindsets. This is a really good receiver draft class, by the way. It's not like if they don't take a receiver in the first round, or a cornerback for that matter, that there aren't a ton of really good skill position players throughout. I mean, they could easily come back around because of the fact that the Eagles are picking at the top of every draft. I mean, they're going to have, their pick. I mean, there's going to be, the second tier of receivers isn't obviously as good as the first tier of receivers. But like I said, look at throughout history. Some of the greatest receivers in history never won Super Bowls. Terrell Owens, Randy Moss, Chris Carter, Marvin Harrison did win one. Guys like that. Those are three of the best receivers in NFL history right there. Guys like Jerry Rice, he obviously, he's on another level. But guys like Larry Fitzgerald, Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones, some of the best receivers in history never got close. And when these guys do win Super Bowls, none of them won MVP. It's because of the quarterbacks that they're playing with. So I wouldn't be so hell-bent on, receiver or bust in the first round, cornerback or bust in the first round. All Eagles fans have a position in their mind that they're like, if they don't get this guy, I'm going to be upset. It's because, that's just the culture that Philadelphia is right now. We're just upset about everything because we're not getting what we want, or, we all have our own philosophy about how you win. Like I said, seriously look at it. Last year, everybody's upset Justin Jefferson. He had a great year, but his team didn't win and his team didn't even make it to the playoffs. You know what I mean? Like, he had a terrific season. Yeah. And CeeDee Lamb had a pretty good season too. Where did they go? A lot of the rookie receivers that had, really strong seasons really didn't go anywhere. It doesn't really dictate championships. And that should be the Eagles fans and the Eagles organization's number one concern. And I feel like I would much rather be happy. If you want to take that same approach, everybody's saying you got to get a weapon to support Jalen Hurts and grow him. Yeah, you do. You got to get him support by putting a lineman in front of him that basically stones his guy and, basically creates a wall of protection so he can develop, Carson Wentz, we saw what happened to him when he's getting sacked every play. He just went straight down the tubes. He's going to look a lot better than Indianapolis because they have one of the best offensive lines in the league and one of the better run games in the league as well. So that's how you support your quarterback. You put a line in front of him that gives him time to go through his reads. He's not always running for his life. You don't want Jalen Hurts, even though he's got great athleticism, you don't want him running around. You don't want him to continue that, stunting his growth because first read's not there. He's got to take off because the pressure's coming. I really think that it makes the most sense for the Eagles to take a guy like Rashawn Slater, who I think will be there, or there's other guys I like. I mean, I really like, once again, I don't know if this guy is a first-round talent necessarily, but I really like Tevin Jenkins. I mean, I think he's a first-round talent, but I think he's more of a late first-round talent. Tevin Jenkins is a guy, I love watching him. Physical guy. I think he would be an absolute fan favorite in Philadelphia, but I don't know if his draft if his draft stock is that high that he could go that high. And I also think that, a guy like Rashawn Slater, based on the fact that he's can play inside or outside, that really might be what the Eagles want more I do think that Tevin Jenkins, even though I think arm length is a bit of a question mark there, I'm not 100% sure about that, but I do think that he is a tackle without a doubt. And Rashawn Slater's a guy who probably looks more like he could probably be both. I don't know. It's really tough to say, but I really like some of the linemen that I've been looking into, and I know that's not a sexy position. I think that's another part of it too. People don't always see what the linemen are doing when it comes to watching games. They do see what the receivers are doing because they're catching the ball or not catching the ball, like in Aguilar's case, or that's something that Eagles fans can easily, they follow the ball. Fans follow the ball. Linemen never have the ball, but when linemen are playing great, we've seen the Eagles do great things behind great linemen, and I really think that that should be the move. I also, we love defense in Philadelphia. We can't look at this defensive line and say we have a great future with this defensive line. There are some serious issues when it comes to this defensive line. We've made, the defensive line has been the strength of the team for so long. And the offensive line. I think we got to keep putting draft capital into that. And I think that, this will take care of itself. I would honestly, the more and more I think about it, the more and more I would like the first two picks of this draft to be an offensive line and a defensive line and continue to load up in those areas because it's that important. It's to me, and you can follow, if you watch contracts, the way contracts are being handed out, the contracts in the NFL follow this formula as well. Quarterbacks get paid $500 million like Patrick Mahomes. then tackles, left tackles especially, and defensive ends get paid probably the second most right after that, unless you're like super special. Obviously, if you're a special, you know, game-changing player at your position, it breaks the mold. But for the most part, defensive ends and, you know, left tackles get paid heavy, heavy contracts because affecting the quarterback is the next most important thing. And I think that, you know, the Eagles should follow that path. Obviously, we got to get a receiver in there somewhere. I'd like to see a running back pretty early. I mean, this is another reason why I wouldn't be mad if the Eagles traded back again and tried to accrue more talent in that second and third round level, because I really feel like that's really where you're going to get a lot of really good value in this draft. The more I watch this value, I think it's, you know, a lot of people saying like, well, you in the top six, the talent level is that much higher. And I think to a certain extent it is. But the Eagles proved, like, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, they haven't drafted a Pro Bowler. The only Pro Bowler they drafted was Wentz in the last however many years. Pro Bowlers don't necessarily equate to championships, and that's what I want as an Eagles fan. I'm not really too concerned of drafting a receiver that puts up Justin Jefferson's numbers or DK Metcalf's numbers, because I feel like 90% of Hall of Fame receivers don't necessarily produce championships. You know what I mean? Like, and if you look at the ones that have, guys like Lynn Swann and Stallworth, well, that was because their defense was amazing. Guys, you know, there's so many great examples of, you know, Hall of Fame receivers that wasn't really why the team won championships. You know what I mean? It's like, it's typically not. Jerry Rice would probably be like the real main exception, where it's like, well, he was so far and above the rest of the entire NFL that, yeah, you could say that he played a big part of that. I just don't think that receivers necessarily equate to winning championships. I just don't. Although in today's NFL, there is definitely a more emphasis on it, and I do think that the Eagles would be more willing. Now, they never would have took a receiver at six. Okay, let's just be very plain with that. Every time the Eagles have drafted, if you look at the Eagles drafting in the top 10 or top 12 historically, that includes, I can just tell you right off the bat, they've never drafted a receiver. The highest they've ever drafted a receiver in the last 25 years was 19th with Jeremy Maclin. The highest they've ever drafted a cornerback in the last 25 years was 26th with Lito Shepard. Now, if you look at times they've drafted in the top half of the draft, it's always quarterback or lineman. Once again, Lane Johnson, top five. Corey Simon, top five, or was he six, I think. Don McNabb, obviously top five. Carson Wentz, top five. Then Mike Mamula, top 10. Trey Thomas was 11th. Brandon Graham was 12th. Jerome McDougal, I think, was, what, 13th or 14th. I mean, if they're drafting high in the draft, it's always those positions. Broderick Bunkley, I think, was 14th, the defensive tackle, if you guys can't remember. You know, that's just how they value top 10, top 15 picks. It's always linemen. And they're still in the top 12, obviously, right now. So I would imagine that lineman is going to be the pick. I think it's going to be, and it makes sense. I'm on board. Like, it's to the point, so many people have such a negative outlook of the Eagles. I don't. I think that, like I said, I've been consistently positive, and there's more and more reason to be positive by the day. Like I said, this trade to me was huge, giving them such, you know, optionality. I don't remember who coined that phrase in the beginning, that Philadelphia phrase of optionality, but they have so much optionality going forward because, I mean, it all really hinges on Jalen Hurts, but they really hedged their bets so well with this trade. By getting three first-round picks next year, they guarantee that no matter what, they either, if Jalen Hurts isn't the guy, they have enough firepower to go and get the guy. And I love that. And it could also be a veteran. I mean, there's a chance that Deshaun Watson's, you know, he might, who knows, maybe he takes a year off until his legal struggles, because he said he doesn't want to play in Houston. It's pretty obvious. So what if he takes a year off, gets his legal stuff under control, says, I want out of Houston, I'm not playing here. And then the Eagles say, well, we got three first-round picks. Boom, that's a done deal. The Eagles are still said to be highly interested in Deshaun Watson. They are watching to see how this plays out. And then a guy like Russell Wilson, say that they have a much better year. Say they stay healthy on the offensive line. Say they get some unexpected contributions from some of their young rookies, and they win the division. Maybe Russell Wilson looks at the Eagles. If they draft Rashawn Slater and Andre Dillard works out, because Russell Wilson's main thing apparently is he doesn't like the fact that he just never has a good offensive line in front of him. He's always running for his life. You know, he just wants to win. So say the Eagles offensive line looks great. Jalen Hurts looks, you know, pretty good, but there's still a lot of work to be done. And the Eagles are looking like a team that might be able to win with the right quarterback. Maybe they trade some of those picks for Russell Wilson. I mean, there's a lot of scenarios that could play out where it's good to have three potential first-round picks to make these things happen. So I am, you know, I've been on board with this plan for a very long time. Obviously, the Eagles, you know, salary cap situation will be much better soon. So to me, you know, I'm looking at these draft picks. I think you solidify one of the lines, maybe both in the first two picks. I think that's, you know, a really good way to go. The receiving core obviously needs help, but I just don't know. I mean, I really think that now they're sitting at 12. Receivers definitely play at 12. I don't think it would ever would have been a play at 6. It just doesn't. You look at the draft history, it's too obvious. They do not think that that type of player leads to winning successfully. It just doesn't. I mean, look at Justin Jefferson had an all-time rookie year last year. It didn't make them win any more games. So, you know, that's not the way you win games in the NFL. So I would go offensive line with that first pick, maybe even defensive line with that first pick, you know, edge rusher, something of that nature. That might be better in the second round, but ultimately, I really want to keep stacking these lines. It's had a lot of success for Eagles fans. Yeah, I mean, having great offensive lines and great defensive lines over the last 20 years has produced one of the best eras of football that this team's ever had, where it's been 6 NFC championship games, 2 Super Bowls, winning one in the last 20 years. How many franchises in the league can say that? Not a lot. You know, there's a couple of them. Like, obviously, the Patriots are, you know, had more success. But they've invested heavily in the offensive line, defensive line, too. If you look at their history over the last 20 years, they've had a ton of great linemen on both sides of the ball as well. And then they've also haven't had great receivers necessarily. They had guys like Troy Brown early on, you know, guys like that when they were winning Super Bowls. When they didn't win Super Bowls, they had Randy Moss. They had, you know what I mean? They had Wes Welker. You know what I mean? They didn't win Super Bowls with those guys. Those guys retired without rings. Well, I'm sorry. No, Wes Welker did win one in Denver. But I'm just saying, when New England was winning Super Bowls, it was with receivers that, you know, weren't really, you know, Deion Branch. Like, he didn't have a Hall of Fame career. Troy Brown, maybe. I mean, he's on the cusp, I guess, with the Super Bowls probably helps him out. Maybe he'll get it one day. But for the most part, was it David Givens? Wasn't he one of the guys? Like, they won Super Bowls with guys playing receivers that, you know, for the majority of Tom Brady's career, that necessarily weren't the guys you think of when you think of Hall of Fame receivers. Like, if the Eagles want to hit on a Hall of Fame receiver, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to win championships because of it. I think that you can look more at guys like Richard Seymour and Willie McGinnis and, you know, Ted Bruschi. And, you know, those are the guys that I think of when I think of, you know, that's probably more to do with why they were winning championships in the early, you know, what was it, the early 2000s than the receivers. Because, like I said, when they had Randy Moss, who's the greatest receiver I've ever seen, one of the most dominant receivers I've ever seen, aside from Jerry Rice, obviously, those are probably 1 and 2 in my book. They didn't win any championships with Randy Moss. The guy caught 23 touchdowns, and they didn't win a championship with Randy Moss in 2 straight seasons, or 2 back-to-back, or 2 attempts. They didn't win a Super Bowl with Randy Moss. I mean, how is that even possible? So, like I said, to me, receivers not as big as Eagles fans have it built up in their mind. 2017, when we won it, Alshon Jeffrey was the best receiver. I think when he had like 800 yards in that season. Like, you didn't need a top receiver then. I don't think you need a top receiver now, but they definitely do have to add somebody. They definitely do have to pick up some firepower at wideout before the season starts for Jalen Hurts. But I think Jalen Hurts would benefit more from a stout offensive line that was keeping him clean so he can go through his reads and distribute the ball properly. That's my opinion. I also would like something I would like to mention too, running back. I would love to see the Eagles get a running back, you know, somewhat early in this draft. I don't know, you know, how that's going to work out. It's a very good running back draft as well. I would say if I could focus on the third round, if they could pick up a running back in the third round, I would be very happy. You know, we got to run the ball. If you're going to run an offense around Jalen Hurts, I look at him a little bit like Lamar Jackson. They run the ball in Baltimore. And I think that you could do a lot for, I mean, same thing with, I've always compared Jalen Hurts to Dak Prescott. When he was successful, they were running the ball. Yeah, I mean, they that's something you got to do when you have young quarterbacks, especially running quarterbacks. You can do a lot of play action stuff, a lot of, you know, a lot of different things when you run the ball. And I think that they will do that because they did run the ball a lot in Indianapolis. I mean, when I see some of the great running backs in this league right now that are coming out in the second round and stuff like that, I mean, we're drafted high in the second round. I'm as interested in that second round pick, see what the Eagles do in that second round pick, because that's the pick. Like I said, I really think that if you boil it down, I think that this first pick goes one of three ways: offensive line, defensive line, or there's a chance they take that receiver. I really think that is something that they could try to say, you know what, we need somebody for Jalen Hurts to consistently get open. That's a very real possibility now. I do think that the Eagles have more emphasis on receiver than they have in the past historically. But I really still think that, you know, offensive line or defensive line, where that pick's going to go. And then the second pick can really go a number of ways based off of that first pick. That pick could be a running back. That pick could be a receiver. That pick could be a, you know, a cornerback, a linebacker. I feel like that second pick is wide open, where it could go any number of ways because they have so many needs. But that first pick, I really feel like you could boil it down to probably a lineman of some kind. So I'm going to go ahead and end this podcast. In a future podcast before the draft, I will be going over a longer mock. I'll give you guys a mock draft of, I don't know if I'll go the full seven rounds. Maybe the next one, I'll spend more time on that second round pick and some of the available talent that could be possibly there. But I love draft season, and we are almost there. So if you guys got this far, if you're still listening and you haven't followed this podcast, I'd really appreciate it. I'm going to keep up doing at least one podcast a week during the offseason with whatever's going on out there. And like I said, I'm going to keep focused on the draft. We got a couple of weeks away from the draft. I'm excited about the draft, and I'll give you guys my take on you know, what I expect going forward. So other than that, this has been Philadelphia Eagles Talk, and I'm your host, Kevin Whitman. Thanks for listening. Other than that, I'm out.